the technology is only going to get better is the bet, and it's only going to get more hungry for compute and data. So look at it like a Formula One car. If you put that on a dirt road, which is your infrastructure, it can only go a certain speed and it'll probably crash anyway. If infrastructure is much better, then it can go much faster and it's less likely to crash. And that's effectively what's happening here, where organizations with poor infrastructure just can't maintain it.
Welcome back to Stay Cognizant, where we bring you the ideas, people, and insights you need to stay cognizant of what's new and what's next in tech. Today, we're exploring how organizations can close the gap between AI ambition and enterprise value. Teams have invested, run the pilots, stood up operational teams, but leaders still aren't seeing the return. Our latest research, Closing the Gap, surveyed over 1,100 senior business leaders at G2000 companies across 10 industries. The findings show that two-thirds of senior executives can't yet point to measurable productivity gains from AI, and a quarter have paused or abandoned deployments entirely. So what's going wrong? What does it take to get it right? And what separates those pulling ahead? To dive into that and more, our guest today is Ollie O'Donohue. He's the head of research at Cognizant. Ollie leads the team that digs into the numbers behind how organizations adopt, scale, and realize value from technology. Ollie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me along. It's a great introduction.
So what the research tells us is that we're at a point where organizations have moved past the question of whether to invest in AI, but most are still waiting to see what that investment actually delivers. Ollie, you've spent a lot of time inside of this data, so let's start there.
So I'm going to be really tedious and even go back one study prior to this one. So we examined the impact of AI on the global workforce.
New Work, New World. Everyone should read it.
Yeah. I always start with that. You should all read this. It's very important. But then I wrote
it is foundational to everything you're building on top of it, right? And what you're seeing as the nature of what we do changes because of AI.
Exactly, by design. So what we try to do is uncover a new layer every year and get closer to the story. So in this work, we spotted something I think everyone understands by now, which is that AI is very technically capable and could impact $4.5 trillion of labor value in the United States economy alone. Before that, it was a little bit lower. It's about $1 trillion in productivity gains. Mm-hmm. But what we started to realize when we were bringing that information to our clients and to different events, different organizations, is people were not seeing those results in reality, right? So there's this big gap, as we call it, where we have the theoretical technical capabilities of AI, and then the real world where they are not sinking in. Yeah. This entire year, and probably into next year, we're gonna try and figure out what's stopping that value from trickling across into the real world. And this piece of research is the first exploring that. So what we analyzed was how the technical foundations of an organization dictate the amount of value that they can achieve as a result of AI.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the scale of the gap that you uncovered. Did it surprise you? I mean, based on the work that you've been doing, did you expect it?
To an extent, I think we knew something was amiss. So again, we speak to, I mean, hundreds of organizations and executives throughout the year, and actually the amount who have said, I'm loving this, this is all going swimmingly and we're absolutely fine, I could count on my hands. So we knew something was amiss, and that's why we did the work. I think the scale of the gap between those doing it badly and those doing it well was the bit that surprised us and continues to surprise us as we look at other different aspects of the gap. So because this one's very technical, what we're able to understand is organizations that are doing things really well and very logical, getting their foundation correct, getting their data, getting their compute correct, building an investment strategy that kind of fills holes as they appear, they do incredibly well. Yep. And organizations that are kind of throwing money a little bit at everything and have a relatively immature technical foundation that they're not really worried about fixing, they do much less well. Yep. And much less well is actually a quite an important phrase, because they still do see results. Yep. That's the important part. So they do still get some orange juice out of squeezing the orange, but nowhere near as much as the technologically mature fundamentals focus group, as we call it. Mm-hmm. And that gap, because we love putting dollar numbers on things, that gap across the G2000 in revenue increase and cost reduction alone is around 2.4 trillion. And for the average G2000 organization, you're looking at between 1 and 2 billion, right? Which is significant.
Huge numbers, right. So you said, you know, throwing money. So we're not here and there, so the ones that aren't doing as well. So, but we're not talking about companies who are not investing at all. These are companies that had pilots, had programs, and in some cases have completely abandoned them. What's the common thread here? What's going wrong for these organizations that have started and stopped?
So there's, I think AI has just become the number one investment priority for, and has been for what, three, four years now, right? So we came off an AI winter when no one was really talking about AI. Now we're in probably the hottest AI summer we could possibly have conjured up. So everyone's throwing money into it. I think the difference is with the leaders is they're focusing on fundamentals, right? So our data isn't good enough for this. It was good before AI, like in that world, we're okay. But now, with something that hoovers this stuff up and throws it into outputs and outcomes, it's nowhere near good enough. It's not accessible. It's not traceable. Our compute and infrastructure isn't ready. It's not capable, right? Mm-hmm. And we need to fix that to move forward. Yep. So there is investment all over the place, but these guys are very focused on solving those technical, you know, effectively building those technical bridges. Mm-hmm. Whereas the other group are doing a little bit of everything. So they'll be throwing a little bit of investment into those activities, but a lot more in things like governance. All important, by the way, but just not where they're going to see the results. Right. It's better to do that kind of afterwards where you've got your technological foundations in place.
And for these organizations that are behind, I imagine that the wider the gap gets, the less time they're going to have to ever catch up. True?
Well, that's kind of our, I mean, it's difficult to say. In some industries, 100%. So in very competitive industries, if you are competing with an organization that has now a much more effective cost base, is bringing better products to market as a result of being able to move faster with their AI initiatives, then yeah, you're in real trouble because you can't compete with those guys. Others have a wider moat where perhaps it's not going to be as impactful and they have a little bit more time. But the reality is, yeah, if you're not moving ahead now and seeing these results, you are going to fall further and further behind because, of course, these organizations are going to have 1 to 2 billion that they can reinvest in other things, perhaps in governance, perhaps in talent acquisition, which the broader group kind of spread their buckets of money out across more liberally. These guys are able to fund it from the savings that they've made or the revenue that they've generated. And you touched on a really important point, and this is one of the key findings. There are a lot of AI initiatives that organizations are hitting pause on. Mm-hmm. In some cases, rightly so, right? Hey, it was an experiment, it didn't work. You know, these things happen, right? This is new. Or it's not delivering the results. This stuff's quite expensive. We need to rethink this. Hit pause, no problem. Yep. Those are the good ones. In others, they are just falling flat. So it was reliant on accessing data that we don't know where that data comes from. You know, the analogy of a car is we don't know if that's petrol or diesel. So we can't put it in the engine because we're in very real trouble if we do. As a result, we have to scrap the entire initiative. And your likelihood of being in an organization that scraps initiatives at a very high level is much greater if your technological foundations aren't in place. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, the guys who are investing know whether that's petrol or diesel and are less likely to scrap it as a result.
The research gives us a clear picture of why the gap exists, and it comes down to two things: the maturity of an organization's tech foundation and where they're pointing their AI investment. Ali, walk us through how those two variables play out.
Well, I'll just outline kind of the quadrant, as we call it, first of all, right? So there are effectively two measures. One is, do you have a focused investment strategy that I mentioned before? So are you focusing on, you know, your core fundamentals, or do you have a broader investment strategy? So you're kind of trying to distribute your money as widely as you possibly can. And we call those focused and broad, logically. You also have folks that are in a very different place to each other. So at the lower end of the quadrant, organizations that know, hey, look, our infrastructure maturity is not great, right? You know, our data's all over the place. It's not organized. We don't have compute power. Our cloud environments aren't where they should be. Our security is very poor.
Sort of at the start of the modernization journey.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Or they've just had other fights to fight over the last 10 years and now find themselves in a precarious position. Yep. And then you have organizations that have done relatively well. So, you know, I kind of think of large incumbents versus tech natives. Tech natives are far more likely to sit in the top because their technological foundations are fairly robust. Mm-hmm. then you can start comparing the two. So broadly speaking, 25% of organizations fit in each bucket. That's not 100% true, but broadly speaking, there's kind of a quarter of the G2000 sit in each bucket. The folks at the bottom level with weak and immature foundations still see results if they have a focused investment strategy, which to us was a big surprise. Mm-hmm. So you would expect, hey, you know, our ship is leaking. It doesn't really matter where we spend the money because everything's going to be a hole to plug. Right. However, if they are focusing their investment on their technological foundations, they see much better results. They're far less likely to have to cancel a project.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I go back to that car analogy. I can draw it out incredibly tediously if you would like, which I think you would. Why wouldn't you? So if you don't know whether the fuel is diesel, petrol, or otherwise, and you're not planning on figuring that out, then that project is dead forever.
Yep.
Now, if that's the case for you and you then invest in a test that allows you to test what that is, then suddenly the project can be revived.
You could get some value out of it. Yes,
yeah, so you might hit pause rather than cancel, I guess is the initiative.
Yep.
But also you're making iterative gains as you go along because you're investing and you've probably been investing over the last 2 to 3 years. So that investment strategy isn't necessarily something that was conjured up the day we surveyed the organization. It was where they are now and has likely been the case probably for the last 2 to 3 years. So they're starting to fill in those gaps. They're aware that there's a lot of ground to cover, but they're starting to plug some of those holes. Whereas organizations that are kind of throwing money in all sorts of different directions are far less likely to be able to do that.
One of the other things that this research surfaced that I think would be kind of an eye-opener to leaders is that organizations who are investing in AI before they have stabilized their foundations, 60% more likely to abandon a deployment early. Why is that the case? Same thing we've been talking about?
I'll throw another car-related analogy at you if you'll have them.
I'll have it.
So
do
I mean,
it.
The way to look at it is like infrastructure is the road. So you've got this technology is just so capable. Like it really is. I mean, despite all of the jokes about it, you know, and you know, coming up with awful things, it's a very capable technology. So look at it like a Formula One car. If you put that on a dirt road, which is your infrastructure, it can only go a certain speed and it'll probably crash anyway.
Yep.
Now,
yep.
If infrastructure is much better, then it can go much faster and it's less likely to crash. And that's effectively what's happening here, where organizations with poor infrastructure just can't maintain it.
Closing the Gap identifies 10 dimensions of tech infrastructure and two that stand out as both the weakest and highest impact opportunities for enterprise. Let's talk about what they are and why they are so impactful.
That's one of the big findings from the piece is that adequate no longer works.
Mm-hmm.
So it did before when you were running software at the time.
Yeah.
But with AI, it uncovers holes incredibly quickly. Mm-hmm. So you start seeing things, you know, it might be just the output quality is very poor.
Mm-hmm.
And actually it's because the data is very poor and you didn't realize, you know, and as part of that experimentation process, you start uncovering all sorts of issues. In the research, what we were able to spot is a direct link between 10 infrastructure buckets, effectively.
Yeah.
So, crudely speaking, about five are in an area called compute. So things like actual compute access, which is obviously very important these days. And we're building huge data centers across the globe to try and solve that problem.
Yep.
But within the four walls of a G2000 organization, that really is the available resource that you have access to, and it's incredibly important. You know, you may have to scrap a program because you do not have the compute power, or it may deliver less results because you can't run it to its full extent. You know, effectively the car can't drive as fast as you would like it to, so you see less productivity at the other end. And the other five are in data. And they are, compute is the most impactful.
Yeah.
And crudely speaking, it's not always this case, but every ranking that drops down one. So if, let's say, data accessibility, you have it good, and then you move down to average, you lose about 1 to 1.5% of productivity outcome at the other end.
So they all really work together, right?
To an extent. Some are more influential than the others, but what happens is, let's say you solve data accessibility, but data security remains the same and data traceability stays the same. That's a problem you need to solve. Otherwise, it'll work as a drag. And effectively, what it does, it erodes the outcomes that you're able to see.
Yep.
So a lot of our data is based on projected outcomes. So what executives want to see, we marry that up with what workers are seeing, which is a pretty good signal. You know, if the boots on the ground are feeling 10% more productive, then you have a pretty good idea of what's going on. Some of those are benchmarked against organizations that are seeing those results right now. So it's a mixture of what we want to achieve and what we're already achieving.
Mm-hmm.
So those iterative gains matter perhaps more than saying we're going to solve absolutely everything at once, right? So understanding, well, for us, data accessibility really is a bigger issue than data traceability. That's not great, by the way, but this is a bigger issue. That's slowing us down by 1.5% in productivity gains. That's only slowing us down by 1%. But then if you don't solve that one, it erodes the outcomes further and further down the line. It gets very complicated.
It's a lot to think about for these leaders, isn't it?
It is, and the technology is only going to get better is the bet, and it's only going to get more hungry for compute and data. So if we look at it as a flat line today, here is the AI tool set that we're working with right now, and here is the infrastructure that looks good. That will keep going up as the as effectively AI technologies want to consume more and become more deeply embedded in a G2000 organization. What is good today will become adequate very quickly. So you have to continue building, building and improving, which again is why the focused investment strategy folks are seeing such a delta, I guess, between the average return and what they're able to achieve. But they're also, and this is another important point from the research, they're also far more likely to have realized results. So a lot of the folks that sit in the bottom part of the grid are more likely to say, we could get 8% productivity gain. We haven't seen anything yet, but we could get 8% productivity gain. The guys in the top of farm are like, say, we would like to get 12%, and we've got 8% already. So our ambition is now stretching through to 12%, which again, I think shows you the gap that's emerging between those that are doing well and those that aren't.
I want to go back to compute for a minute. Compute is the weakest infrastructure element across the board. One in three leaders also say that it's an inhibitor for what they're trying to do. And yet, it also is a thing that gets deprioritized. What's going on there?
So I'm an ex-cloud analyst. So just the bit before I was Cognizant's head of research, I was a cloud analyst, and I've tracked it, I guess, for 5 or 6 years. My team call me the boring guy, I guess, because they do all the really exciting stuff like AI, blockchain, and I look at cloud. And cloud became commodity very quickly, and I think that's the challenge, is there is a leadership mindset on the value that infrastructure brings.
Right.
And I suspect it's easier to justify a business case that says we're getting this best-in-class tool, top of the range, our competitors are using it, give me some money for that, please, and putting it on top and then seeing that there are technological foundational issues. That's much easier to achieve than saying, look, before we do this, I'm going to need 2 years and this much money to get my compute estate in order to be able to even run that machine that you're talking about. And I think that's the big disconnect. It's a mindset shift between the role infrastructure played in the last wave of digital transformation and the role it plays now, where you can't do anything with AI unless you have that foundation in place. In the past, you probably could have run software to a decent level before you encountered challenges, whereas now you just couldn't do it at all.
Everything that you just said about this mindset shift and then going back to this notion of adequate not being good enough anymore, how do you walk into a boardroom? I mean, it's a whole different conversation now in terms of the mindset, the investment, the commitment. How are our clients grappling with that? And what are the conversations that they're having? Because I imagine it's a much different change management project that's happening now in the organizations in particular that are leading.
I think it's, I'm going to use the word focused, which is obviously a methodological construct of the research that we've created, but in a slightly different way, which is we're seeing a maturing of the way leaders are thinking about where they put AI. So I would, if I were to kind of draw out a map of the last 2 years, it was everyone using AI, figuring out what it looked like for them. So entire organizations were giving people licenses for every AI product under the planet, figuring out what worked and what didn't. Whereas now organizations are kind of pulling back on that a little bit and starting to think, right, well, if we put this here, what happens? This is the outcome we would like to achieve. We would love 12% productivity growth, which is what the leaders are getting in our research. But we're only seeing 2%. Why is that? Now let's draw under the cover and see which of those building blocks, which of those pillars are creaking the most and what we can do to fix them. And I think that's the conversation that's happening in the boardroom right now. I mean, we're in the room a lot. We present to clients a lot. And that seems to be the big shift. Now, I would say it's probably a 2026 shift. So kind of from January onwards, it was like people were taking their investment strategy a little bit more seriously and trying to figure out, well, look, the last 2 years we've thrown everything at this and we've got some results, but nowhere near what we need.
Right.
Now let's pull back on that a little bit and look at the things, the bits and pieces that are working. And again, not to keep leaning on the research, but that was one of the big findings that comes out from the broad folks and the focus folks.
There's an industry aspect to the research that you've done, which I know is, not fully out there in the world yet, but what can you tell me high level about what you're seeing from an industry lens? Who's at the front and who's struggling and why?
Well, I mean, I'll tease this then. So this is cheeky.
You heard it here first.
Tough.
I'm
trying not to cannibalize some of my colleagues' work, but I do know who is ahead, and it won't surprise you. The tech industry is one of the leaders, right? So, I mean, each industry has its own cocktail of challenges. We classify broad G2000 inhibitors and accelerators, which we categorize in this work. So it's across the board, the full industry.
Yep.
We take a much more nuanced look at the vertical level. So obviously a life sciences organization has a fundamentally different bucket of challenges to wrestle with than a retail organization. They may have more money to play around with to solve some of those challenges than the hyper-competitive retail organization.
Yep.
But what you see, I think, in effect, is the usual suspects of industry. So at the top, tech.
Yep.
Best foundations, right?
Yep.
They build this stuff. And at the bottom, the hyper-regulated industries that actually...
Because their infrastructure also tends to be the most, relies on legacy infrastructure, things that don't talk to each other, and data's in lots of different places, right?
By design.
Yep.
Yeah, by design. You're not allowed to have that data talk
to
each other. That data can't be discoverable for a reason. So when we talk about, hey, data traceability is your biggest weakness, well, actually, it's your strength, right?
Part of the game.
Yeah, exactly. So we see that kind of bifurcation from, you know, like I say, the usual suspects have this bigger bucket of structural challenges to deal with that will take a long time to overcome because obviously regulators need to go hand in hand. We've also done quite a bit of research looking at what consumers will tolerate. And as you can imagine, in regulated industries, they are not keen for AI to play that big a part.
Yet.
But in other industries, the analogy we do is booking an X-ray. Yeah, we don't want AI involved in that. Buying a packet of crisps, sure. Why would I care, right? And you see that in
lower risk, higher reward. Perceptually, right now
it's commodity. Yeah, exactly. Who cares? It's not good. You know, the worst thing that can happen there is my crisps arrive late, I suppose. Whereas the worst that can happen with the other one is quite significant. And you can see that play out in the data as well. And like I said right at the start, we try to layer our research on top of each other, so we bring some of that consumer thinking in to understand why is retail moving in the way that retail is. Why is life sciences moving in the way that life sciences is? And to give another data set, a New Work, New World, because we analyze the impact at the job level, we can draw stories on why the potential in life sciences perhaps is much greater than in another industry, perhaps even banking, even though they have the same regulatory framework. So it's a bit of a politician's answer. I've teased you with who's at the top and who's at the bottom, but I don't want to go back to my office and my team. Attack me.
Well, we will wait for the results to be released. But in the meantime, on this research that was just released, one thing we haven't talked about yet is that another commonality of firms that are doing better is that they're working with external partners. Talk a little bit about what it is that an external partner can maybe offer that you can't necessarily find internally as you're on this journey to realize value from AI.
Well, there are a couple. So one of the areas that we spend a lot of time looking at is the impact of skilling. You know, a lot of this technology is very new. There was a piece released today, I think, actually, talking about the demand for AI skills is so great that most governments are now launching fresh upskilling initiatives. And of course, we did a partnership with the World Economic Forum that explored the exact same topic.
Yep.
And when you're working with a partner, you can get a little bit closer to accessing those skills without necessarily having to build them all in-house, right? And that's an important part, given we're all kind of trying to figure out what this means and build new things that perhaps have different technologies overlapping in ways that we didn't quite think of before. You know, in technology foundations being an example of that, where AI is now touching areas that we didn't realize it would need to touch to be successful. The second part is you get somewhere faster if you're walking with someone who has a map. Right. So, you know, it sounds very glib, doesn't it? But it's true.
But
so
it's true.
When you're working with a partner that's dealt with this issue 100 times over in 100 of different industries, you get two things from that. So the first is that map. Like, well, we know where there are issues that it might take you 2 years before you bump into that wall. But we've already bumped into it, so we know where that is. And the second one is kind of the cross-pollination of innovation. So, hey, sure, you're in retail, but we solve this problem in banking, and actually the smartest and fastest way to resolve it is to bring a banking solution into this retail problem. And I think that's what external partners bring. And again, you see that play out in the data. So not only are people who are winning more likely to be working with external partners, they're more likely to be seeing results today rather than thinking about what those results might look like. But they're also far more likely to be realizing the upper section of those high results. So far more likely to be seeing the 30% increase in productivity, perhaps, that people who aren't working with external partners aren't yet to see.
We've covered a lot today. The scale of the AI value gap, what's driving it, and what the best organizations are doing differently. So let's close with what it means in practice.
Boring is cool. I say it to my team all the time. Because
the fundamentals are cool, because you're not going to get to the cool stuff without them.
Exactly. Like, you need to build the road or the railway first. Otherwise, disaster will shortly follow. And we've been through a period, the last 2 years have been all about cool. Mm-hmm. So it's all, hey, there's this new technology, you can do these really cool things. Hey, look at what I've done. Hey, I've done this really cool thing. Yep. And now it's time to get boring.
Take the step
now.
Back.
And boring is now cool. And if you don't do the boring part, you're not only you're not going to see really great results.
You'll be left out of it.
Well, yeah, and you'll probably face some disaster. I mean, there is a reason why 60% in the lowest category, the lowest quartile, 60% of projects are scrapped. You know, there's a reason for that, because you haven't done the boring stuff. You haven't done the homework. Boring is cool.
All right. Question just for you now, based on your experience, this research, new work, new world, what's the trend? What are we going to be seeing a year from now?
I think it's all about reality now. So we've been talking a lot as an organization, but also as a research team, about turning the theoretical capabilities into real world value.
Yeah.
And frankly, if we don't do that soon, none of this makes sense.
Mm.
Like, genuinely, none of this makes sense. This is not necessarily a cheap technology. It's not an easy thing to implement, which is what our latest research shows. You have to do a lot of work to get there. And if you then don't see results, what's it all been for? So I think the next 2 to 3 years, from a research perspective, but I think also from kind of, I guess, a business and a macroeconomic perspective, it'll be all about making sure that investment actually has some return somewhere down the line. And you'll see more and more pieces from us and more pieces out there that say, by deploying it in this way, doing this thing in our organization, we achieve this result. Whereas right now, what you're seeing is, we deployed it this way and this thing happened. You don't see the result part. Mm-hmm. So it's going to become all about the results. And I think that's just a natural maturing. You see, we saw that with cloud as well.
Yep.
I mean, it's hard to believe, but there was a period where people were saying, cloud, what are you talking about? It's best to have it on-premise.
We'd
rather own it. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And no one's having that conversation necessarily now. But it went through that period of 2 to 3 years of, let's try this out, what works, what doesn't work. Now what results are we seeing? And I think that's the next stage that we'll be certainly looking at as a team, but I expect everyone will be looking at.
The key takeaways? Foundations determine returns, focused investment beats broader investment, and the organizations seeing the strongest results aren't just building faster, they're building on solid ground with the right partners alongside them. Ollie, thank you so much for joining us today.
An absolute pleasure.
And thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back soon with more on how Cognizant is helping organizations turn emerging technologies into meaningful progress. See you next time on Stay Cognizant.